we're beginning here on the top of Lamed Amud Aleph by the two dots. Gemara here is discussing the last line in the Mishnah, which is, if a situation, Chene Omer L'Chaveiro, person says to his friend, Helech T'lezeh, V'talin Shifchateich Etzel Avdi. Take this remuneration, and then I want your Shifcha Knanit to be together with my Eved Rabbi, or the Gir says Rabbi or Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Omer, Einu Etnan. That's not considered to be Etnan Zona. But Chamim Omrim, Etnan, Chamim say that is Etnan. Now the Gemara wants to understand the scenario here, where it says, Ha Omer, the Chavero Elach Tele, Ze Chule, Ha Shivcha Le'Eved Mishra Sharya. So a Shivcha Kananit to an Eved Kanani for sure is Muteret. And so then, why would there be a problem of Etnan Zona if the Biyah that is taking place is not a problematic Biyah?
Since only Rabbi Elazar believes that when you have a Biyah that is Muteret, that still creates a problem of Zona and then Etnan Zona, because we saw at the end of yesterday's daf that Panoya Baal Pnuya Shalodu Shem Yishut makes her into a Zona, but nobody else believes that. So if here it's Mishra Sharia, why is there any problem of Etnan Zona?
If it is an Eved Ivri, it's also possible that it's Mishra Shari. The Gemara will discuss that in a minute. So let's assume now from the Gemara that we're talking about a Shifcha Kananit and an Eved Kanani. That's Mutar, and there'll be no discussion as to Etnan Zona here. So Amar Rav Huna, Rav Huna's answer is Etzlo Kamar. He's actually saying him about himself. V'had Dekane Avdi. So then why did he write Avdi instead of Eved? Lishna Ma'alya Kamar. He's saying it euphemistically. So the way that the Rabbeinu Gershom reads that euphemistically is Klomar, De'enu rotze lomar b'feirush v'talin imi. He doesn't want to say explicitly that you should sleep with me. So instead of saying sleep with me, he says sleep with my Eved. But he really meant himself. And obviously that would be problematic. To sleep with a Shifcha Kananit is a Biat Znot. And if that's the case, then it would be subject to Etnan Zona, that exchange or that payment that's made. Now, even though the payment is not being made to the woman herself because she is a Shifcha Kananit, the fact that it's paid to her Adon is sufficient, either because the Adon owns the rights to her Bia, or because the Adon is acting as an agent for her. And in either case, he Etnan will be considered Etnan in that situation, even though he's paying the master of the Shifcha Kananit. And obviously, a Shifcha Kananit is not allowed to marry or to have Bia with a regular Adon Israel. And so therefore, that would be the Etnan Zona. Rashi says that the Lishnam Alya over here is very interesting. He says, Lishnam Alya is be'eved hainu ever hamishamesh. So the Eved is not a reference to him. It's a euphemistic way to refer to his member. And that's how he's saying Abdi, my servant. He's not speaking about himself. He's speaking about his, I guess, call it sexual desire. And he's speaking about it in that euphemistic term of Abdi, which is not the simple way to read the euphemism over here. The Rabbeinu Gershom sees it the more simple way. But when it says, Ihochi, my time at the Rabbi. Or if you Gershom is Rabbi Meir, the problem with that, then how do you explain the alternate opinion in the Mishnah? There was a machloket in the Mishnah. And Rabbi says it's Einu Etnan. That's not considered to be Etnan. Why wouldn't it be Etnan? It's a classic case of Biat Znot. And you have Biat Znot for compensation. That would be Etnan. So I'm a Shmuel bar Rabbi Yitzchak or Rav Shmuel bar Nachmani. Lo'olam Abdi. Literally means his Eved, v'chik tanei be'eved ivri. And he's speaking not about an Eved Kanani, but rather about an Eved Ivri. Ihochi, my time at the Rabbanon. Then you can't explain, or it makes it hard to explain the position of the Rabbanon, who believe that there is Etnan over here. Why would there be Etnan? Shivcha, the Eved Ivri, Mishra Sharya. A Shivcha Kananit, an Eved Ivri is allowed to be together with a Shivcha Kananit. So if that's the case, then how do you have a problem of Etnan anymore? It's clear here that Etnan is associated with a Bia Znut. It has to be something that is an illicit type of Bia. Scenarios where there's either a Biat Avira, and there's something wrong with this Bia because it's an illicit relationship of some sort, or it's a Bia with a woman who he has the opportunity to have Kiddushin with, and instead of having Kiddushin with this woman, he has a Bia with her, Derech Znut. Those are issues of Zona. But the Shifcha Kananit over here doesn't have either of those aspects to it. First of all, in terms of the Bia, it's not a Bia Tavera, it's something that's permissible. And in terms of the issue of Kedushim Tov Simba, here there's no other alternative in terms of marrying her, and therefore the Etnan should not be Asur in this situation. By an Eved Ivri with a Shifcha Kananit, you don't have either of those problems. He is Mutar to be together with her. So whatever kiddushin or whatever relationship they can have is fine. And her status as a zonah is not determined by this Eved Ivri. He's not the one who renders her a zonah. And if that's the case, then this is not an etnan zonah. And so why would it be problematic?
Or even a simpler way to frame it is that the problem of zonah is because of a biat znut. And by definition, a biat that is permissible is not a biat znut. If that's the case, then there's no etnan zonah over here.
Mar says, Akamai skinan, begon delete isha ubanim. The case where he does not have a wife and children. That means the Eved Ivri does not have a wife and children. And we know from the Parshia at the beginning of Mishpatim, when it speaks about an Eved Ivri, it says, Im vigapo yabo, vigapo yetze. If he comes in with his goof, meaning he himself, vigapo yetze, he'll also go out by himself. Im bal ishahu, if he is a married man, when he came in and was sold into slavery as an Eved Ivri, v'yatza ishto imo, then his wife is released with him. That to which the Gemara says about that, whoever put his wife into slavery, it was just him into slavery. And from here you learn that the Adon is responsible for the wife and children of the Eved Ivri as well. Im Adonav yitein lo isha, if the master gives him a wife, which here would be this Shivchat Nanit, v'yaldola banim ubanot, and then he has children to the Shivchat Nanit, isha, v'yaladat yele Adonav, then the wife and the kids belong to the master, and then when he's released, he goes out by himself. So the Gemara learns from the Pasuk of Mishneh Schar Sechir Abdecha that your Eved Ivri works double time for you. That means he works during the day as an Eved Ivri, and at night he works for you in producing more slaves because you can wed him to a Shifcha Kananit, and then that Shifcha Kananit and the offspring belong to the Adon. Now, that is true depending on what type of Eved Ivri is. And that is based on the Pasukim that we read from Mishpatim. There it says, if he comes in alone, he goes out alone. And then it says, well, if he's married, then his wife goes out with him. Immediately after it says he's married, it says, Im Adonav yitein lo isha. His master gives him an isha. It seems to be from that juxtaposition teaches you that only an Eved Ivri who's married is mutar to be together with a Shifcha Kananit. But if he was not married when he entered into being an Eved Ivri, then his master does not have a right to give him a Shifcha Kananit to sleep with. So first of all, it seems to be that it's determined by the master. It's not up to the Eved Ivri. It's only if the master gives him a Shifcha Kananit is it mutar. And in this instance, the master cannot give him a Shifcha Kananit because he's not married. So that's the case. Hakamai skinan. What are we dealing with here? Kagon, the late Lei Isha Ubanit. He does not have a wife and children. Titania, and we have a braita, ain lo isha banim, ain rabo moser lo shivcha kananit. That if he does not have a wife and children, then his master can't give him a shivcha kananit. Yesh lo isha banim, if he does have a wife and children, rabo moser lo shivcha kananit, then his master can't give him a shivcha kananit. So that explains the position of the chachamim. That's why you have a problem with etnan over here, because you're involved in an illicit relationship. It's a situation in which he does not have a wife and children. So now, if the master gives him a Shifcha Kananit, or purchases him bi'ah with a Shifcha Kananit, that's an illicit relationship. And given that that's an illicit relationship, it will be a problem of etnan zonah. The question is, what about Rabbi? Or Rabbi Meir, who says that it's not considered to be etnan over here. So then, how do we explain their position? So either, the way that Rashi explains it is that he argues fundamentally, and he believes that that distinction does not exist. It happens to be a machloket tanaim. And Rabbi will subscribe to the position that believes that an Eved Ivri can always be wed to a Shifcha Kananit, and it's irrespective of whether he's married or not. That's one way to learn it. The Rambam in the Perush Mishnayot, on the other hand, explains it that he does not argue fundamentally with. He agrees that you're only supposed to give him a Shifcha Kananit when he is married. If he's not married, you should not give him a Shifcha Kananit. But on the other hand, if you do give him a Shifcha Kananit when he is not married, it's not an Isur of Znut. It's not a problem of Znut. Even though here it's a sur to him, since there's situations in which it is mutar to him, then it's not considered to be a Biat Znut in this situation. And so that's why there's no Etnan Zonah in this situation. Now the Mishnah moves on to the sister Halacha that is associated with this, which is Lo Tavi Etnan Zonah. So we dealt with now etnan zonah. Now we're moving on to mechir kelev. And that's what the Mishnah asks, Ezohi mechir kelev. What's the situation, circumstance of Mechir Kelev? Omer lechaveiro, person says to his friend, Helach tlezeh, tachat kelev zeh. He says, take this sheep, take this animal, bartering it for this dog. So if you barter an animal for the dog, then that's called Mechir Kelev. V'chein shnei shutafim, if you have two partners, shechilku, that they split up the assets of their partnership. Echad natal asara, one of them took 10 animals, 10 sheep, echad tisha v'kelev, and one of them took 9 plus a dog. Shegeneged akelev asurin, all the animals that are on the opposing side of the split up from the dog, they are all problematic. So the 10 sheep that are facing off against the 9 sheep and the 1 dog that was given to one partner, the one partner took the 10 sheep. All of those are considered to be Mechir Kelev, and the Gemara will ask why that is. Vishem HaKelev Mutar. The 9 that are together with the dog, they're all Mutarim, because they're not being bartered for a dog. Now the Mishnah says, Etnan Kelev. If the situation is reversed, where it's either Etnan Kelev, or Mechir Zona, if it's either one of those, Harelu Mutarim. Those are not problematic. The case of Etnan Kelev, Rashi says, is Helech Tlezeh, take this Tleh, B'talin kabatcha itzli, and you'll give me your dog to sleep with. So he's purchasing the bi'ah from the individual's animal, that is etnan kelev, and the mechir zonah, as Rashi says, is hiflit tdeb zonah. He purchased a zonah, or with that tle. He buys her as a shifcha with that tle. So that's then a mechir zonah. So neither of those are problematic, because the pasuk says, ki tovat Hashem lekecha gam shnehem. And the Gemara learns from that, Shnehem velo arba'a, means 2 and not 4. So there are only 2 manifestations in the pasuk, not 4 manifestations. That means only Etnan Zona and Mechir Kelev are problematic. Vladotehem mutarim, the offspring of a Etnan Zona, or the offspring of a Mechir Kelev, they are mutarim. But the drosha that we have is, Hein velo vladotehem. We learn the word Shnehem, we learn Shnehem, Hein meaning them, velo vladotehem, and not their offspring. So that pasuk teaches us both that there's only 2 manifestations, which is the way the pasuk lays it out at Nan Zona Mechir Kelev. And it also teaches us that only they are restricted, but any offspring from them are not problematic. Tanu Rabbanan, Mechir Kelev, Zehu Chalipe Kelev. When it comes to Mechir Kelev, this is a bartering for a Kelev. V'chein hu omer, and I can show you that that's the meaning of the word Mechir in this case. Because the pasuk in Tehillim says, "Timkor amecha belo hon, velo rebita b'michirehem." It says you will sell away your nation belo hon, not for a fortune, velo rebita b'michirehem, and you do not exaggerate or take large sums in their sale. So over here you see the word mechir connected to timkor, a transaction. So that was the word mechir means a transaction or a bartering for something. And that's how we know that the word mechir kelev means to barter or transact with the kelev as the compensation or bartering object to purchase whatever it is that you have on the other side that could have been ra'oi to go on the mizbeach. All right, now the next couple of lines in the Gemara are extremely difficult, and that is because the girsaot are such a mess over here. You can see the number of little letters that are in each of the words here. And there's very, very messy groups of girsaot. We're going to basically follow the Rabbeinu Gershom's view here, which is that there are 2 lishonot. There's a lishna and then a lishna achrina. And the truth is that they just change the order of the questioning in the Gemara. There's not much difference between them. But the basic gist of the Gemara is the same in both cases, which is in the pasuk, the Gemara wants to know, how do you know that the etnan in the beginning of the pasuk is not also modifying kelev in the pasuk? That is, you have lotavi etnan zona u'mechir kelev beit Hashem elokecha. So now, why can't you say that means lotavi etnan zona, and then u'mechir kelev means both an etnan u'mechir kelev? Well, how do you know that the etnan is not also modifying the kelev? That's the basic gist of this Gemara over here, and it just breaks it down in 2 different ways. That's what the Gemara first says here, ema etnan mamash. Why don't you say that it means literally etnan? How do you know the word mechir means bartering over here? Why don't you say it means etnan kelev instead of meaning mechir kelev, like we said, is a bartering transaction? Why don't you say the word mechir means etnan kelev? Mara says, im kain, if you were right about this, havelo tlato, then there are actually 3 manifestations in the pasuk, because now you're telling me that there's etnan zona, there's etnan kelev, and there's mechir kelev. That means there are 3 things, And we already learned gam shnehem tei velo shlosha. We already learned in the Mishnah shnehem velo arba'a. The same thing here, shnehem velo shlosha. It can only be two manifestations, not three manifestations. And then the questioner says, wait a minute, you misunderstood the question. Mikam rinan anan etnan u'mechir. We're not asking that the kelev should have both etnan and mechir kelev. Rather, we're saying etnan velo mechir karminan. We're saying that the kelev should be etnan as well, which would mean the isser in the pasuk is etnan zonah and etnan kelev. It just wrote for zonah the word etnan. And by the kelev, it used the word mechir, but mechir is really the same thing. It's a synonym for etnan. Where it says, well, if you would do that, imkain, neimakra, lo tavi etnan zonah v'kelev. If that was the case, then you should just add the pasuk right, lo tavi etnan zonah v'kelev. Why would you have the word umechir in the middle? You could add the etnan, modifying the zonah and the kelev, by just simply leaving out the word mechir. So mirichtiv, since the pasuk wrote etnan zonah umechir kelev, it separated out with a new description of what's happening in this transaction, shmaminah. Mechir kelev hu dekasa rachmana v'lo etnan shmaminah. You see from there that it's not a problem of etnan kelev, but rather a problem of mechir kelev. And so it's etnan zonah, mechir kelev, shmaminah. That's the first lashon. The lishna achrina, again, does something very similar. It just does it in the reverse order, doing it through the Rabbeinu Gershom over here, and says, ema mai mechir kelev. So again, it starts from the second question that the Gemara asked before, which is, why don't you say mechir kelev etnana shel kelev? Why don't you just say the definition of mechir kelev is etnana shel kelev? Or it says, imkein, if don't cry etnan zonah v'kelev. Then it should have just written it like that, etnan zonah v'kelev. Why did it write mechir? So then the Gemara says, ema etnan zonah u'mechir kelev. Say that it says etnan zonah mechir kelev, the kari behochi. And then you should explain it in the following manner. Etnan u'mechir kelev means that etnan and mechir kelev apply, both of them apply to kelev. That the Gemara answers to what Hashem gam shnehem ktiv shnayim velo shlosha. So that's two and not three. So again, it's the same. The Lishna Achrina just switches the order of the questions from the first one, but the questions are twofold. One of which is, why can't you say that a kelev is restricted both in etnan and mechir? And then the other question is, why can't mechir mean etnan kelev? And the rejection of that is, first of all, if it wanted to say etnan on both of them, it should have left out the word mechir totally. And as far as adding on the possibility of etnan and mechir kelev, that you have gam shnehem ve'lo shlosha. Right now, the Gemara moves on to a shutafim shechilku echad notel. It's actually a Gemara that we saw together in Bechorot with the same issue with mechir kelev, which is the Mishnah describes that you have nine in a kelev and then you have ten on the other side. And the Gemara says, nipo chada l'chadi kalba. Why don't you just take out one that is the barter for the kelev? And the remaining nine should be mutar. You have 10 animals, and then on the other side you have 9 animals and the kelev. So just say the kelev matches up with one of the 10 on the other side, and then the 9 and 9 would be mutarim on both sides, because they're opposing each other. And the Gemara's answer is, Hachamai skinan could go into tofi de me kelev michad minayu. The value of the kelev is greater than one of the animals on the other side. Daitufuna kelev, that excess of the kelev, shadi bikulu, is spread amongst all the remaining animals. So Rashi here brings two lashonot with regards to how to explain this, and we'll just explain both of them. They're pretty straightforward. He says, in the first version, for instance, if you have 10 tlaim that are worth a dinar each, so now you have 10 times 1 dinar per tla, that's 10 dinarim. And then 9 tlaim that are with the dog, each one of them is worth a dinar minus a ma'a, less than a ma'a, 1/6 of a dinar, dehainu. So then you have tisha dinarim, the 9 will equal 9 dinarim, Pachot tisha ma'ot, minus 9 ma'ot, because each one of them has a deficit of a ma'a from a dinar. Va'kelev shaveh dinar v'tisha ma'ot. And then the kelev is worth a dinar plus the 9 ma'ot. And so now that in total gives you 10 dinarim. Because the kelev makes up for one of the tlaim on the other side that was a dinar. And the extra 9 ma'a then wipe out the deficit on the other 9 animals that are there. So that shows you that the dog matches up with one of the animals on the other side. Plus, it is now making up for the deficit in each of the 9 animals of a dinar, so that it means that it's taking like a ma'a out of each of the other 10 animals. So one of the 10 animals, it's taking up the full value for. And then a ma'a from each of the 9 remaining animals, it also has values embedded in the dog. And for that reason, it's considered to be a bartering transaction where the dog's value is manifest in all the 10 animals on the other side of the transaction. Then Rashi brings Lashon Yerushalmi. The other version is, it's a case where each one of the 10 animals is worth 4 zuz plus half a fifth, which is a tenth. So it's each one of them is worth 4.1 zuz. So 10 times 4.1 zuz is 41 zuz. Then on the other side, you have each of the 9 tlaim on the other side are worth 4 zuz. And that gives you 4 times 9 is 36. And then the kelev is worth 5 zuz. So that kelev that's worth 5 zuz, that matches up with 4.1 of the animal on the other side. And the other 0.9 that is worth in excess of that one 4.1 opposite it, that is equal to the 0.1 of all the other 9 animals. It's equal to the 4.1 of the one tlaim. And then the 0.1 of all the remaining tlaim add up to 9 times 0.1 is 0.9. And that's why it's worth 5 zuzim or 5 dinarim. And that's why it's, again, connected all the animals on the other side. So those are the two versions that explain it. But basically, the value of the kelev is not just connected one of the animals on the side. It's connected that animal plus it has the excess that it needs to compensate for the differential between the 9 that the person got and the 10 on the other side that are worth more. And that's why they're all affected. All the 10 animals opposite the kelev are affected and they are considered to be mechir kelev. Alright, now it says, etnan kelev u'mechir zonah mutar. Amalei rava mi par zakai el ravashi. He asks the following question. Menahan milte damar rabbanon. Where do we know this information about the rabbanon saying, ein znut behemot? That there is no such thing as znut with behemot. Meaning that when a person has bi'ah with an animal, that's not considered to be znut. And obviously the nafkamina is that etnan kelev is mutar. So how do you know that information, or where do you know the fact that there's ein znut behemot? Amarlei, he says back to him, lo nishmot kra, lichtov etnan zonah vekelev. Because if that was the case, then the Torah shouldn't have left out saying that it's an etnan zonah vekelev. Or in essence, it's our Mishnah is really the source for this fact, because etnan kelev is not restricted. If it was that bi'ah with a animal was problematic, then etnan kelev would be restricted. The fact that it's not restricted shows you that there's no din of bi'ah znut when it comes to an animal. And Tanya Namayochi, we have a braita that supports that contention. How do you know that they're okay? Shnemar, bet velo dalet. That's what we learned from our Mishnah, a similar drasha, which is shnehem and not arbatam. Vladutehem mutarim, and their offspring are also mutarim. Shnemar gam shnehem, heim velo vladutehem. Now the braita is interesting enough, an exact replication of the Mishnah or the drasha in the Mishnah. So why is the Gemara bringing down the braita? That's number one. Number two is, didn't Rav Amipar Zakaya know the Mishnah? So why is he asking Rav Ashi, where do we know this din of Ein Znut Vebeima? How do we know that information? So Tosfot asks that and says, Vekasha, Yelo Ami Yodea Matnitan Krod Dorish Bet Velo Dalit? He didn't know our Mishnah, that it's Shnehem Velo Arbatam, and there's no Mechir, there's no Etnan Kelev, and so it's clear there's no Biat Znut. Gold, Maikam Hader. And then what's the answer over here? Meaning that he's telling them the pasuk. So why is the braita any better than the Mishnah? And why is it that he asked the question if it's so obvious from the Mishnah? So the Gemara, he answers, in Nira Lemori, he says that my Rebbe thought, Vade Ravacha Miprazakaya Yodeha Mishnah. He knew the Mishnah, Va Pasuk, and he knew the Pasuk as well. But his question is the following. By the Hefech, Im Adam Notein Et Nan Zonah, Amanat Shialin Kalboetz La, Imbiata Kelev Mikriya Be Znut Olo. So our Mishnah only deals with a unidirectional situation, which is it only deals with the situation in which the individual purchased the right to sleep with the animal. So it's a man that is sleeping with the animal, and there we say there's no Biat Znut because Etnan Kelev is not a restriction. So it tells what it says. The question now is manifest the other way around. What about if it's a woman who has the behemah, brings the behemah upon her, is that considered to be a biat znut? And that's the nature of the question over here. And therefore, the Mishnah and the Pasuk don't necessarily address that because they're addressing the other side of this question. And then he says that the Braita is the answer to the question, even though the Braita says exactly what the Mishnah says. That's because the Mishnah can be shorthand, can write in a shorthand. And it could have skipped. Maybe it meant both, but it only wrote it one way. A Braita, if it's giving you the information, should have addressed both cases. And if it didn't address both cases, that means that they think that the din is the same in both directions. And that had it been there was a differentiation, it would have had to note it. And the fact that the braita didn't note it, that's an indication that it is the same din in both directions. Tosafot agrees that Lashon Tachuk Ketzat. doesn't exactly fit into the words. It doesn't fit so nicely into this sugya, but that's his version of why it is that the question was asked and why the bright doesn't answer and not the Mishnah. On the other hand, Rashi have a different way of dealing this. Rashi says the question here was not a question about etnan kelev, but the question or the nature of the issue here is Ains nut behemot. How do we know that a woman who sleeps with a behema is not a surah lebala? That's not considered to be an extramarital affair that then will restrict her with her husband. And so the question was totally separate or disengaged from our Mishnah, and therefore bringing in the Mishnah is something that's helpful now, because he's bringing in the Mishnah to show that biat behema, or there's no such thing as etnan kelev, which means that there's no din of znut with regards to behema. Given that, she's not going to be a surah lebala. So that's one way to do it. The Gra, on the other hand, says that the deal over here is with a kohen. A kohen is restricted in marrying a zonah. Is this woman considered to be a zonah? So, ishash nivala de beima, does she have a din zonah for the kohen? And she daseret the kohen. So again, once you do that, the question then is totally disengaged from our Gemara, or totally a different topic from our Gemara. And therefore, it's brought here because the proof text is from our Mishnah or from the Braita. And in that way, he's now bringing in the information from Etnan Kelev to show something about a totally different halacha. In that sense, it would be possible that Rav Mipar Zakaya knew the halacha, but he wanted to know where the source was. And Rav Ashi reaches out to hear the Mishnah in Temura to bring that answer and show that if you don't have Etnan Kelev, that's evidence of the fact that cohabitating with animals is not a din in znut. The Gemara here is now going to discuss about vladot. We said here that there's a vlad of a etnan zonah, and a vlad of mechir kelev are not restricted to the mizbeach. What about other types of restrictions with regards to animals? What is the impact on the vladot? Amarava, vlada nirbat, asura, hi, vlada nirbu. An animal in which bestiality was performed, a female animal, that was pregnant. She and the fetus are now restricted from going on the Mizbeach because the action that was performed on her and the fetus that was there. They're one entity and they were both affected by it. No kachat. If you had a female that was pregnant that then killed a person, that would then disqualify it from the Mizbeach if it was al pi edachad al pi abalim. So then asura, that animal and the fetus are restricted to the Mizbeach because he vevlada nagchu. They were partners, they were a joint entity in performing this negicha, this goring that killed someone. On the other hand, vlad mukse, benevad mutar. The offspring of mukse, which we dealt with on daf chafchet, as well as nevad, which is an animal that was set aside for avodah zarah, or to krovet avodah zarah, or an animal that was worshipped, then the fetus is mutar. My taima, what's the difference here? Limei akte, limei pauchula. That's because when they dedicated it to Avodah Zarah, they dedicated the mother, not the fetus. And when they worshipped it, they were worshipping the mother. They weren't worshipping the fetus. Therefore, it's identified separately from the mother, and it doesn't have the restrictions of the mother. Ikedamre, Vlad Muksa v'Nevad Asur. There are others that say that Vlad of the Muksa and the Nevad have the same din as the Vlad of Nogeach and the Vlad of Nirbat. So in that case, my taima, what is the reason then that they all have the same din? Seems to me you made a nice distinction here between the case of nirbat and the nogachat, whereby the fetus is considered to be a partner in whatever is happening, versus muksa menavad, which doesn't have to do with the animal, it has to do with the individual who's interacting with the animal. What they had in mind was the mother and not the fetus. So that distinction seems to make sense. So why would you break down that distinction and say they're all problematic? My taima, the nechele benifche. Because the person benefits from the expansive quality of the animal. That means that the larger the animal is, the better it looks. So if you're going to be worshipping something, the bigger it looks. That's a more significant, quote-unquote, god or avodah zarah. If you're going to be offering it to the avodah zarah, then the bigger the animal is, the more or the greater the gift is that you're giving to the avodah zarah. And so therefore you have a vested interest in the animal being bigger, and so the fetus gives it heft and makes it bigger. Tent is also for the fetus and not just for the mother. Amar Rav Achodvai Bar Ami, Amar Rav, HaMikadesh BePeresh Shor HaNiskal Mikudeshet. Someone who gets married with the waste or the excrement of the Shor HaNiskal, it works. If it's worth a Shaveh Pruta, you will be successful at it. BePeresh Eglei Avodah Zarah, another, if that is true of the calf of Avodah Zarah, Eino Mikudeshet, it doesn't work. The perish is either that which is in the digestive system, digestive tract, or it's the waste or excrement that the animal is dropping out. If that's worth a shavet pruta and you try to marry with it, then you will succeed if it has a din of shavet pruta. The problem is that both shor niskal and avodah zarah are asurim bahana'a. So if they're asurim bahana'a, then everything about them should be problematic, and how can you get married with it? So that's what the Gemara says, my time. Why should this work? The Gemara gives two options, ibaitema kra, ibaitema svara. You can learn it either from logic, or you can learn it from the psukim. Ibaitema svara, you could learn it through a logical argument, which is, nechale gabi avodah zarah b'nifchei, by avodah zarah, the person wants the heft, wants the larger size, and therefore you're interested, even if the larger size, as we said before, is caused by a fetus, over here, by the perish being inside the animal, that gives it more heft. Even though it's, in real sense, it's not something edible or anything that's useful, but nevertheless, it makes the animal look bigger, and that's something that you have a vested interest in. By shor niskal, you couldn't care less how big it is. The animal's going to be put to death now, so the size of the animal is no benefit to you, and the larger it is, probably the worse it is for you, because you're losing more by being put to death. Therefore, you have no vested interest in that expanse or that health. Given that, it would not be problematic. So therefore, in that case, by the shor niskal, the perish is not covered by the isur hanah of the parent, because the perish is considered to be separate and not something that is included in the shor niskal. And since it's now independent or separate and you got no benefit from it, then there's no isur hanah with it. And that's why if you married with it and it was a shevet pruta, it would work. On the other hand, by the avodah zarah, where you have a vested interest in the size of the animal and the parish is giving it more heft, in that case, then it would be subject to the isur hanah, because you have interest in it being associated with the avodah zarah. That makes it part and parcel of the avodah zarah. V'ibayitei makra, some say it comes from the pasuk. Kamei avodat kochavim by avodah zarah, it says, v'kayita cherim kamau, that you will then excise it, destroy it completely. Anything that you bring from it, any benefit that derives from it, is like it. So they're dashing the word vaita to be chayehu. Anything that is produced out of it, anything that you're able to garner from it, is cherem kamo, has the same din as it itself, which means that it needs to be destroyed, it needs to be wiped out. It's concluded under the Isra of avodah zarah. Gabe shor niskal tev lo yachelet bisaro. You may not eat its flesh. Bisaro asur pesho mutar. And they're medayek that it's only the basar, the edible parts of the animal, that are restricted. The non-edible parts of the animal are not restricted. You could learn bisaro could be literally bisaro, edible parts, and not things that are inedible. Or bisaro can just represent the utility of the animal, things that are useful in the animal, versus perish, which has no value and no use. And so therefore, it would not be included in that restriction. Okay, next Mishnah. Natan la ma'ot, arelu mutarim. If he pays her in cash, then it's not problematic, because cash doesn't go on the mizbeach. Since cash doesn't go on the mizbeach, there's no problem of etnan zonah in this case. But, yenot shmanim misiltot, if he paid her in wine, oil, or flour, or anything else that does go on the Mizbeach, meaning these are actual items that do go on the Mizbeach and are roi for the Mizbeach, then they are asur. Then they're problematic, because then they do take on the shame or the problem of etnan zonah, because these are items that could have been put on the Mizbeach. Natan la muktashim. If he gave her an animal of hekdesh in exchange for the biyah, for the etnan zonah, erelu mutarim. Those are not problematic. In all likelihood, let's assume now that he doesn't own them. They're not his to give away. And so therefore he can't affect those animals because they're not his. Ofot. If he gives her birds, if chulin, they are asurim. They are problematic. Now the ofot are something that could have gone on the mizbeach, and therefore the ofot would be restricted with regards to etnan zonah. But then it says, she'abedin. You might have thought otherwise through a logical argument. When it comes to things that are already hekdesh, they have a problem. If they get a mum, a blemish in them, they'll be disqualified from the mizbeach. Yet, as we just said before, etnan zonah and mechir chalav don't have any impact on them. Oaf, she'ena mum poselbo. By oaf, as we know, mum is not a problem for the mizbeach with regards to an oaf. It's only if it's mechusar eiver that is a problem. Einu din shaloy etnan u'mechir chalav. Then would it be clear that etnan and mechir should not have application to it? Tamad lomar, that's why we quote the pasuk,
which is Lo Taviat Nan Zonah Mechir Kele Beit Hashem Lokecha L'chol Neder Ki Tobat Hashem Lokecha Gam Shnehem. The Chol Neder comes to say anything that you would be put on the Mizbeach, including an oaf, Taviat Oaf. Kol Asurim Legabi Mizbeach, anything that is restricted from Mizbeach, Vladotehem Mutarim. Their offsprings are Mutarim. Rabbi Eliezer Amar Vlad Treifa Lo Yikra V'Algabi Mizbeach. If it's the offspring of a treifa, it may not go on in Mizbeach. This is something we already discussed earlier, that Rabbi Eliezer is of the opinion that a Vlad treifa is like the parent, or takes on the status of the parent. Therefore, the Vlad is restricted, just like the parent. Rabbi Chanina ben Antuganon Sumer, Kishirashi Yankam in a treifa. If you have a kosher animal that is nursing from a treifa animal, Sulam Yalgabi Mizbeach, that restricts it from going on the Mizbeach. Kol HaKodoshim Shinasu Treifa, any HaKodoshim that became a Treifa after they were already Kodesh, Ein Podim Otam, you cannot redeem them. Ein Podim Et HaKodoshim Lachilam LeKlavim, because you can't redeem Kodoshim in order to feed them to the dogs. Alright. Tan Rabbanan, Natan Lachitin Vasan Solet. If he gave her wheat as the remuneration for her services, and she made it into flour. Zitin gave her olives, Vasatan Shemen, and she made them into oil. Anavim, he gave her grapes, Vasatan Yain, and she made them into wine. Tani Chada Asurim, Vatani Idach Mutarim. We have one brayta that says they're still problematic as a problem of Etnat Zona, and another brayta that says they're totally fine. Rav Yosef, Tani Guryon Demin Asporc. So, Guryon Demin Asporc explained the difference in opinion here based on Beit Shammai Osrim, Ubeit Hillel Matirin. That Beit Shammai are the ones, or the authors of the brayta that say Asurim. Beit Hillel are the authors of the Brayta that say Mutarim. Beit Hillel Sabre, Heim Velo Vladotehem, Heim Velo Shinuyehem. The way that Beit Hillel comes to that conclusion is because they read the Pasuk of Shnehem, and then we broke the word up into Shnei Heim, and we learn from that, Heim Velo Vladotehem. They are restricted, their offspring is not restricted. Beit Hillel then learns also from the word Heim, Heim Velo Shinuyehem, them, and not their changed object. Meaning that if you do a shinui in the object, it no longer has the Easter associated with it, and that's what it means. Hey, the item that was given as the compensation, that is restricted. But once you change it into something else, that restriction goes by the wayside, because it's heim velo shinuyim. Bichamai savri, heim velo vladotem. They do subscribe to that it's them and not the offspring. But gam, they're both shinuyim. But they use the word gam shnehem, as a ribui, to tell you that they are both restricted when you use the item itself. And even when you have the item converted into something else, it still remains restricted. Where it says, Beit Hillel Aktiv Gam. What does Beit Hillel do with the word Gam? So Gam the Beit Hillel, Kasho, you're right. For Beit Hillel, we don't have anything to do with the word Gam. And it's a little bit of a problem for them because they don't have a drusha for that Gam. Everybody agrees that you're right. That Shinuyim are considered to be something that's a change. And that's what Beit Hillel says. It's Haim, Velo Shinuyim. It's them and not something that comes out of them. On the other hand, Beit Shammai has a specific riboy that reverses that and says that despite the fact that there's a shinui here, it's still included on the Yisur. So you're right, you need a riboy to include it. But yes, the natural state would have been like Beit Hillel says, Hem velo shinuyim. It says they're restricted, anything that's changed is not them anymore. Alright, Tanur Banan, Beit Hashem Elokecha. So the Gemara is darshaning all the pieces of the Pasuk, and now it's darshaning that middle piece that we never discussed, which is Lo Taviat Nan Zonah Mechir Kelev Beit Hashem Elokecha. Prat le para, shena ba'a le bayit. So that comes to exclude a para that will never be brought to the Beit HaMikdash. As Rashi says here, a para aduma. A para aduma is something that is mukrav on Har HaZeitim. It never comes to the Beit HaMikdash. So then the para aduma is not affected by Etnan Zonah Mechir Kela because it's not subject to Beit Hashem Elokecha, Divrei Rabbi Elazar. That's the view of Rabbi Elazar. Chomim Amrim, lirabot et harikuim. That Beit Hashem Lokecha comes to include. So it's very interesting. We don't generally see this, but over here they have a machloket as to whether Beit Hashem Lokecha is a miut or it's a ribui. According to Rabbi Lazar, it's a miut to tell you only things that come to the Mikdash are problems of Etnan Zonah. Paraduma, which doesn't come to the Mikdash, that's not problematic. Chamim, on the other hand, see it as being a ribui. Anything that's brought to Beit Hashem Lokecha, that means even items that are not mukrav al gabe mizbeach, but items that are put onto the mizbeach, they are also problematic like rikuim. That means metal plating. The metal plating that would be used for the mizbeach, if you donate that metal plating, but that metal plating was from an etnan zonah, then it would be problematic. Zman chachamim. Who are the chachamim here? Amar Rav Chista,
Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Yehuda. It's got to be Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Yehuda. Tanya, we have a braita, not on Lazahav. If you gave her as compensation gold, Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Eino Sim Rikuim. You can't make them into plated metal. Afil Achorei Beit HaKaporet. Even to be used behind the Kodesh HaKodeshim. As Rashi explains over here, that the Gemara tells us that there are 11 Amot in the Azarah behind the Kaporet, and they have a quote-unquote lower status of Kedusha over there. So maybe you would think that you could add things to the building, or you could do something in the building over there, even from an Etnan Zonah. So what Rabbi Yossi Rehiya says is, no, anything to do with Beit Hashem Elokecha is restricted in an Etnan Zonah. And you see from here that even a metal object like that, which is not going on the Mizbeach, but it has to do with Beit Hashem Elokecha, that is restricted from being used in the Beit HaMikdash. Right? Natan LaMukdashim, Arelu Mutarim. He gave their Mukdashim, they're not subject to Etnan Zonah. Where it says, V'yu Mukdashim Etnan U'mechir Chalaleh Mikal V'chomer. Why aren't Mukdashim affected by Etnan Zonah Mechir Kelev from a Kal V'chomer? U'ma Ofot, She'ena Mum Pesol Behen. We tried the other way around to say, okay, well, if Etnan and Mechir don't apply to Mukdashim, then they certainly shouldn't have applied to Ofot. And that's why we have the plus to tell you that Ofot are restricted. But now that you restricted Ofot, reverse the Kal V'chomer, and now force it that the Mukdashim should be subject to Etnan Zonah Mechir Kelev. And that's what the Gemara is doing here. If by Ofot, where the Mehum is not Posel Behem, Etnan and Mechir Achal Aleihem, Etnan and Mechir have an impact on them, Mukdashim Shamum Posel Behem, Mukdashim, where Mum does have an impact on them, Enu Din Shetnan Mechir Chalayim, certainly Etnan Mechir should have an impact on them. Tamal Lomar L'chol Neder. That comes to tell you anything that you will give in the future to the Mikdash. Lotzi Et Nadur. To exclude things that are already Nadur, that are already given to the Mikdash or given to Hekdesh. So it's only things that you would in the future make Hekdesh does Etnan Zonah Mechir Chalayim have an impact on. But things that are already Nadur, things that are already given to Hekdesh, Etnan Zonah Mechir Kelev have no impact on them. Taima Dimat Inu Kra, it's only because the pasuk tells you that they don't affect Mukdashim. Halom Et Inu Kra, Havamina Kiyai Vla Mukdashim Chalahem Etnan Mechir. So you're telling me, had it not been for the pasuk, if he gave her Mukdashim in order to compensate her for her services, that those would have been problematic? It's only because we know Lechol Neder, not Lechol Nador. Vala B'monohu. It's not his money. It's not his possession. It belongs to Hekdesh. So how can he ask her something that doesn't belong to him? It's a case where he's bringing on other parties to join in his Korban HaPesach. According to Rabbi, the Tanya, if a household has less than a seh's worth, then you can add other parties to it. The drush that they darshan over here is miyot means hachayeyu miseh. Michtei achila velo michtei mekach. So now, the Gemara says is that imimata bayit is that you have too little. Question is, too little of what? And then it tells you, miyot miseh, that you're allowed to use the seh in order to compensate for that deficit. So the way that the Tadakama is learning it is that imimata bayit, if the bayit doesn't have sufficient means in order to provide food for the household, so then you're allowed to use the seh to provide that value, meaning that deficit of mizonot, to the household. Which means that if you have a Korban HaPesach, and you have room on your Korban HaPesach to add other parties to it, you're allowed to sell those places, shares in the Korban HaPesach, in order to raise funds for you to eat. That's the view of the Tana Kama, and Rashi says, She'en lo mashi yokal, imein lo etzim litzloto, or he doesn't have wood to cook it with. Anything that would be dealing with achila, and the Gemara Pesachim brings down a machloket as to whether that achila only refers to items that are necessities for the Korban HaPesach itself, like spices and wood for the Korban HaPesach, or it's a broader context of achila, like he needs matzah and maror to do the mitzvah, or even just food in general. Those you're allowed to garner from selling out shares in your Korban HaPesach. What you're not allowed to do is make it into a transaction by which that you will gain money. If you want to make it into a business where you buy a Korban HaPesach, and then you break it down into shares and sell it off to people, that you can't do. Rabbi Omar, ach michdei mekach. If you want to use it as a transactional vehicle, it's fine. Shemein lo memane acherim imo. If he doesn't have a way to raise money, if he doesn't have a way to sufficiently purchase other items, which means imimata bayit, the household doesn't have sufficient funds or means by which to purchase something,
And here too, how far that goes is whether that's just items that are necessary for the mitzvah halayla, or does this include a broader context of items and maybe even lechatchila. It's not even a bidyavad situation that we allow you to do business with this type of item. So that depends on these different versions of the explanation of this in the Gemara Pesachim. So then you can use this. You can raise money from the shares by placing people on his Pesach. You can do that by selling shares in his Korban HaPesach or in his Chagigah, Umatov Chulin, and then his money is Chulin. It doesn't have any Kedusha associated with it. Shamanat Keni, Kedushu Yisrael Piskayim. Because that's the underlying assumption when a person is Makdish, his Korban HaPesach, he doesn't intend it to be Kodesh entirely. He means it to be Kodesh for his portion of it. The remainder, he will then join people into the Korban HaPesach by selling them shares in the Korban HaPesach that will then make the entirety of the animal Kodesh, by joining these people in to fill in that deficit of people that he needs. And the truth is, obviously, it's Kodesh from the outset. But when he's Makdisha from the outset, it's embedded in that Hekdesh is the possibility of him sharing it with others through selling off pieces of it, and he doesn't intend for it to belong to Hekdesh for those purposes. And according to Rabbi, that means that you have sufficient ownership in the Pesach to liquidate it by selling it off to other parties and doing a business out of it and making money from doing such. If that's the case, that you have sufficient rights to do that, if you sold that share to a zonah for her services, then that would be etnan zonah, because you have the monetary rights for those shares. And since you can raise money from it, if you instead use that to purchase the services of a zonah, then you create etnan zonah. And that's the case where we need the pasuk to tell you, if it's mukdash already, even if you have rights here that you could have done something to it, those rights don't matter because it's a chol neder and not the chol nadur. That's why we need the pasuk, even though in most instances of a hekdesh, it wouldn't have even been a question because you don't own the hekdesh, and therefore you can't affect something that you don't own. Now, the truth is that it could have been also the case of kochim kalim, according to Rabbi Yossi Aglili, who thinks that kochim kalim are considered to be mamon balim. Kol asurim negabe mizbeach. Amarav, kol asurim negabe mizbeach, vladotehem mutarim. Anything that is a sur to go on the mizbeach, its offspring are fine to go on the mizbeach. Vitani Allah. And on that, we have the following statement. Rabbi Eliezer Oser. Rabbi Eliezer says it's problematic. Amar Rav Barahuna Bar Chinina, Amar Rav Nachman, Machloket. The Machloket here between Rabbanan and Rabbi Eliezer revolve around the following issue, which is Shibru V'Sofnir Be'u. It's a case where they were already pregnant, and then the bestiality took place. The Rabbi Eliezer Savar Ubar Yerachimou. Rabbi Eliezer believes that the fetus is considered to be an extension of the mother, and therefore they are both parties to the problem of bestiality. Rabbanan Savar Lav Yerachimou. And the Rabbanan, who Rav is speaking on behalf of, says that it's not considered to be an extension of the mother, and therefore it's a separate entity. So the bestiality is formed the mother, the fetus is totally independent of that. Aval Nir Be'u L'Sofi Bru, if they had the bestiality beforehand, and then the animal became pregnant afterwards, Divrei HaKol Mutarim. In that case, everybody thinks that it is mutar, because then it becomes a case of zev zeh goreim. The mother is problematic, the father is fine. Zev zeh goreim is mutar according to everyone. That's Rav Huna Bar Chinina and the name of Rav Nachman's version of this. Here's Rava's version of this. Rava amar machloke kishinir be'u ulu sofi bru. The machloke between and the Rabbanan and Rabbi Eliezer is in a case where the bestiality was performed, and then only afterwards did the animal become pregnant. The Rabbi Eliezer savar zev zeh goreim asur. So it's Rabbi Eliezer thinks that when you have two contributing factors to a situation, one of Yisur, one of Heter, then the offspring or the outcome of that combination is a sur. Rabbanan Savri, Zev Zeh Goreim Mutar. And the Rabbanan hold that it's Mutar. Aval. On the other hand, Ibru, Olusof, Nir Be'u. If on the other hand they were already pregnant, and then the bestiality took place, Divya Kol Asurim. Then everybody agrees they're Asur, because Ubar Yerachimo, and therefore they're both parties to this situation. Virova the Tame, and Rava's the Shitato, Damarava Vlad Nirbat Asura, Hebe Vladan Nirbu. Because as Rava said, that a Vlad that was part of this bestiality, the mother and the Vlad are problematic because they were both parties to the act of bestiality. Vlad no Gachat Asur, Hebe Vladan Nachu. And again, a offspring of a Nogachat, and again here assuming that she was pregnant at the time that the Negicha took place, or pregnant at the time the bestiality took place, both the mother and the offspring are considered to be problematic, because Rova thinks that the Ubar is Yerech Imo, and therefore both are parties to the problematic behavior over here. Lishna Achrina, Amri Law,
Another version of this is the difference between Rav Huna Bar Chinina and the name of Rav Nachman Rova is the following. Rav Huna Bar Chinina and Rav Nachman machloket mishenir b'u shein muktashim. The machloket is when Pishyar was performed after they were already muktashim. The Beleza Savar Bazio Milk, that it is, it's considered beneath the dignity of Hektesh to take such an item and put it on the Mizbeach.
And not only the animal itself, but any offspring that it produces is also considered to be a Bizui.
Rabbanan Zavrei Lo.
Whereas the Rabbanan believe that maybe with regard to the animal itself it's a problem, but the Vlad or the offspring of that animal is not considered to be a Bizui Milta.
About Nirbe'u, Kishen Chulin, if the Bishyali took place when they were Chulin, being makdish them is enough of a shinui that everybody agrees that the offspring from these animals will be mutarim lamizbeach. So if the bishtiali took place when they're muktashim, so Rabbi Lezer thinks that it's beneath the dignity of Hektesh to have such an item go on the mizbeach, and therefore it's disqualified. On the other hand, Rava Amar Rav Nachman machlokik kishnir ba'u kishen chulin. That's only if the riviyah took place when they were chulin, that's the machlokik. Rabbi Lezer savar bizoy milta, that's considered to be a beneath the dignity of Hekdesh, or it's something that's such a denigrated item, therefore it and its offspring should not be allowed to go on the Mizbeach. Rabbanan Zarei Hovishtanu Mutarim. The Chachamim say, well, it's going to be changed to Hekdesh afterwards. That Shinu is enough to take away the shame, both the shame in Hebrew and shame in English, from this animal, and therefore the offspring can go on the Mizbeach. Aval Nir Be'uk, Shem Muktashim. If the Biyah took place after, the Bishyah took place after Muktashim, Jivri Akol Asurim. Then everybody believes that it's problematic because then there's no shinui anymore and you have a problem on Bizui Milta because the animal that's going on the Mizbeach was the animal that the Bishyali was performed with and therefore the offspring be restricted from the Mizbeach. Okay, we're going to stop here at the bottom of Lamed Amud Bet.